Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, the 13th, September 13th, 2008. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and we have two guests on today, cross country on the Atlantic and Pacific coast, with us to discuss facing the bad news. The reality is that the financial economic system is dead. That may not be new to some of you listening to this show and following Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, who forewarned of the timing last July 2007. But part of the badness of bad news is nobody is telling the truth. Everyone is getting an overdose of fake good news, and our work it is cut out for us, any citizen who wants to be sure we're not headed into a dark age, but we're going to fight it through and use this as an opportunity for a whole new economy and hope. Now, to discuss some of the latest developments and the background to this, I'm very glad to say we have here in the studio John Hofel. Welcome, John.
Hi, Marcia. How are you?
Good under the circumstances. And many of you know John Hofel from his weekly coverage on the EIR Online, also the print magazine Executive Intelligence Review, and his work with the LaRouche Political Action Committee. And we're glad to have from the LaRouche Youth Movement in the LPAC, LaRouche Political Action Committee out in Los Angeles. We welcome Tori Harrison. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Mary.
Hi. And so I want to turn to John, but with this one putting in right up front on this show that there is on the presses right now to be shipped out in the next 48 hours a mass circulation kind of newsprint pamphlet called Tantamount to Treason, referring to LaRouche's remarks about what Paulson did, the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, Hank Paulson, on September 7th to announce this mega bailout that won't work anyway regarding the housing agencies Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But the thing about this pamphlet, it's about 12 or 16 pages. John can tell us more, but this is the kind of thing that people should get. It's in a format you can download and print from the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, LaRouchePAC.com, and your resources, your circulation of it, your organizing with it could make all the difference. So that's posted now. Look on it on the LaRouchePAC.com. Look on the organizing, I believe. Click on the organizing icon. And this is a mass organizing question. So, John, let's start with wherever you want to, either that September 7th particular event, or the fact that I think right now in New York City there's a jo zombie jamboree, I'm told, of meetings between nabobs of Wall Street and Citicorp and everything, and Mr. Paulson and others about something called Lehman Brothers.
Yes, one of the biggest zombie covens in the world right now is on Wall Street. You have all these dead banks. And the banks are dead because the financial system has died. And when the system that keeps these things alive dies, then the creatures that operate within that system die. The securities machine has gone. This is why they're so desperate. This is why Paulson and Bernanke, the plunge protection team, the bankers, are so desperate for bailouts. And it's also why, no matter how much money they throw in, they always need more. If you look at the history of this recent bailout period starting last December, the Fed created this new facility called the Term Auction Facility. $40 billion. This will get us through the end of the year. This will take care of the problem. That's what they said. Well, it's now up to $150 billion. And along the way, they've created two more facilities. And actually, they've created three more now. They keep creating these facilities. Now they've pumped in loans to the banking system going on $2 trillion. And
Wow.
if you add in the loans that have gone in through the Federal Home Loan Bank system, it is well over $2 trillion. And it's not enough. Things keep blowing up. They created the new facilities because Bear Stearns blew up. Now you have another casualty, which is the big soap opera in the news. Will Lehman survive or not?
Yes, every hour is will someone take it over? Who can be what flunky can be found?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, who cares? We don't need them. They have no purpose. I mean, they never really had a purpose, but at least they had a business when we had this securities machine. But that's dead. There's no function for them anymore. So these things are collapsing, and this is what this quote unquote bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is. This is a bailout of the banking system. It has really very little to do with Freddie and Fannie.
With housing, you mean?
Well, housing has nothing to do with it. The closest it comes to housing is mortgages. It's the debt which is then used to create all these securities, which were then leveraged up to, the heights, so that you take billions of dollars of, you take trillions of dollars worth of mortgages, you can turn it into more trillions of dollars worth of mortgage-related securities, and then you pile probably quadrillions of dollars of bets on top of that. And that was the game, and that's how this whole thing kept going. And that system has died. So now the effects of that collapse are working their way through the balance sheets of the financial system. These guys are being forced to deal with the fact that they have to start writing some of this stuff off, that the business doesn't exist, that their income stream has disappeared, and therefore they're disappearing too. It's not that we're going to put some of these things down. It's not anything we're doing. This is natural law at work. And they are vaporizing. And this is scaring the hell out of these people because nothing they do works. They keep saying it's all under control, the end is near, we've turned the corner, and none of it is true. It keeps collapsing. Now they've launched the biggest bailout in history. How much this thing is going to cost, they don't even know yet because it's not about saving Freddie and Fannie, it's about saving as much of the banking system as possible. And nobody knows what the losses are in the banking system yet. The final tally won't be in for quite a while, but it's going to be in the tens of trillions of dollars at least. Hundreds of trillions, we may even get into quadrillions. You never really know because they've leveraged this thing out so much. But this, they're trying to plug a growing hole by pouring in taxpayer money. And it's absolutely insane. What it will do is trigger Weimar-style hyperinflation. It will blow out the dollar. It will blow out the whole economy. It will basically kill the nation. This is the stupidest thing these guys could possibly do.
Right. And you're talking, I think Mr. LaRouche has been in touch with people on a daily basis. You're talking about the Paulson gamble on the idea that something would work. I'm not trying to go to the inner reaches of this person's mind, but it's in the short term. I mean, this isn't long term that this is going to be worked out or play out, right?
I mean, this the path that they have taken cannot work. You can't have a bankrupt system bail itself out. It just doesn't work. And I mean, if you were looking for a metaphor to describe this, these are the fleas trying to come up with some way to save themselves, when the real subject is how do you save the dog? And the answer is you start with a flea dip.
Right.
We don't need these parasites. We need to get rid of them.
now we can go before the hour long show goes by. There are different things we definitely want to ask. One thing is that the people behind it, I mean, we have the immediate playing out of this impossible bailout in its own terms. But over the decades of these parasites, you've often characterized the nature of what's behind having bubbles and bubbles and trillions of what you've called a world casino, I think, develop. Who is this?
Well, the easiest way to identify it, as LaRouche does, is the Anglo-Dutch liberal system, this financial apparatus. This is the system of the parasites themselves, which is the centered in London and in the Netherlands. Basically, it's an outgrowth of Venice. Sort of Venice moves north. And this is the central banking system. These are the people who actually control the Federal Reserve, control the European Central Bank. You know, the Bank of England and the Bank for International Settlements are sort of mothers in this group. And it's a monetary system, and the way in which these financiers work is that they control the money. And they get everybody to borrow money from them. They get you hooked on debt. You know, it's debt farming. The idea is to build up huge debts and then use these debts to control people. And so we came out of World War II the strongest nation on the face of the earth, the strongest industrial economy ever. They couldn't beat us. They couldn't take us head on. But what they could do is to induce us to commit suicide. And what we did was we committed suicide. Now you had this policy which was launched from these banking circles of the controlled disintegration of the U.S. economy. Then carrying it out here in the United States was a sort of a fifth column. Notably people like Felix Rowan of Lazard and now Lehman, of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Rockefeller Foundation, sort of these family funds along the European model of these guys. They helped organize it. The corporate media helped sell it.
So there were change of laws in the
Change
states
of
and all that
laws.
deregulate. You're talking about the 70s, 80s,
Yeah.
90s.
Systematic
Okay.
deregulation. Systematic. Anybody who stood up to it got smashed. And then you had the corrupt officials in the United States government and in state governments who let this thing go on, and they just carried out the deregulation. And now you have these, it's culminated in this corruption called the Dodd-Frank bill, the Housing and Economic Recovery Act of 2008, which is neither about housing nor economic recovery, should be called the bank bailout disaster of 2008. Because the only thing this bill will do is kill people. It will destroy the nation. We will asset strip our infrastructure even more than we have now. We will continue to shut down the productive side of our economy. We're going to throw people out of work. We're going to grind the population into the ground in order to pay the tab for this bank bailout, which is going to wind up blowing everything up anyway because it can't possibly work.
And this raft of people involved in this latest, this travesty, Nancy Pelosi, who said the Democrats had to support it and this was a necessary thing,
Yes.
Obama,
Yeah.
McCain, the whole,
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Dodd in the Senate, Barney Frank in the House.
right. So that's the, now, one thing about this, if we switch over to California for just a moment, on the state level there, where you have, I mean, this is, there's, I don't know what the population, 36 million people, the biggest state in the country. The revenue is plunging, as it is everywhere in the country, to fund normal government functions on the state and local level. I think they've been without a budget for 71 days or 80 days because no one can agree. It's a policy morass, but Schwarzenegger is essentially saying, shut everything down and shove it down your throats, and you can't intimidate me, and I'll stomp on you.
Yeah, he's morass too.
So Tory, you are out there organizing in the situation of really sweeping cutbacks in as school started or as people try and get into a hospital or something. What's the situation in the way of how people see things or what you're trying to do in your organizing drive?
Well, what you have out here with organizing, with the population, you have pretty much two extremes with the crisis, where people are right now somewhat behind LaRouche in real time. And so before I go further with the population, I just want to state first that when we go out to organize into the field, you know, obviously we're guided by an idea. We're just not handing out leaflets. We're not saying, you know, hey, you know, just give us money to do what we do. But the idea that we are guided by most clearly and always working on is this idea of real optimism. You know, not in a sense of, you know, something trite or cliche, or, you know, we're all going to sing Kumbaya, or, you know, if we just hold hands and do yoga, everything will come, or we just pray to Jesus, you know, we're going to get by this. But no, but, you know, a real sense of optimism is the ability to manifest creativity into people, where what we're seeing is, look, you know, LaRouche knows what he's doing. There is no good news, but what is the paradox of that is you being able to act in real time and stepping out of a mechanical method of thinking, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic type of thing, but you yourself getting a sense of being able to act on the stage of history, to be able to participate in this thing called, you know, real time, a real phase space, a real shift in historical process and do something. Now, we're not saying, you know, every particular that you need to do. Like, you saw this with an example of one of these Puma women named Michelle, I think her name is Michelle Taylor, forgive me if I said it wrong, but, you know, what she did is she put together, you know, a certain type of a list of all the delegates to sign so that Hillary could speak. And, you know, this hadn't been done before, and she said, well, look, I actually contributed something to history. Now, obviously, that was for that time, but we need more people to act in that kind of way to figure out, you know, with LaRouche's help, with what we're doing, what he's proposing as a solution, to figure out how they can actually participate in it. You know, and that gives them a real sense of hope, that it really is up to them, and we can show them and lead them in the direction, but they do have to have the responsibility. You know, mama's not going to take care of you. You know what I'm saying? Like, breastfeeding time is not here. You have to actually do it yourself, you know, respond to the situation. So, but what you have then is you have these two extremes where, you know, one extreme in the population is saying, well, the government's going to bail us out. It's all going to work out. We're going to get the money. The money's going to come. You know, everything's going to work itself out. And then the other extreme of the same type of, you know, mechanical outlook is, well, they can't just give out money. You can't spend money like that. Fiscal austerity. And that's where you see Schwarzenegger, which is, you know, obviously a double-edged sword because I'm, you know, I don't know if he's come out and endorsed the Dodd-Frank, but what he, on the reverse of that, what he has been is saying no money to anybody. We're going to have to kill people in order to pay back this debt that's not even our debt. You know, it's not the population of California's debt, just like the debt that with the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the whole banking system isn't the population's debt. It wasn't the population that's responsible for that. But yet Schwarzenegger's saying, well, look, we're going to hold you responsible because, you know, like compassion, budget cutting, forget the exact words, is a virtue. And that is not a virtue, you know, by far, obviously. That's a policy of immorality, of looking at making a few people benefit at the erosion of the entire population. And so what we've been doing to actually get those two extremes to be able to do something productive is, you know, we have these DVDs. We have the 1989 video, the Harvard Yard video, and, you know, the Al Gore videos. And what all of these do principally is they address a certain sense of stepping out of the box of mechanics, of arbitrary rearranging things, or going with a logical system, you know, guided by mysticism. Instead of that, we're saying, look, the landscape that we're operating on, this is the paradigm that we're operating on, and this is how we break it up. And it has been working. I mean, we have had, you know, more young people, where for a while we had a stagnation of young people not coming around because, you know, obviously they weren't reading when we were putting out leaflets as much because most of the population is illiterate to a certain degree. But when we started putting out these videos, young people actually got, you know, they got inspired. They said, oh, wow, I can understand this. I can understand what they're saying. I can really think. I'm getting a sense of this. And we just keep, you know, pumping out these DVDs, and then the idea is get them to watch the DVD, get them to have a sense that they can think, and then say, look, now you got to go read a LaRouche paper. Now you actually got to go through a rigorous analysis, a rigorous study of what an economic process is. And so the combination of, you know, us being out there on the streets, getting people into the streets, you know, having our product with the DVDs, getting the optimism out, that's how we're looking at it here on the West Coast and shaping the population to be able, you know, not to go crazy, but to do something of something that has real hope, that has something that has real passion to intervene into the situation.
Right. And is this, mind you, campuses have opened up again in the last couple of weeks. Has this been somewhere you've focused on, or just in the course of things you run into students?
Well, there are lots of young people in Los Angeles. I mean, it's not a city per se, so you have these just little sprawls of, you know, housing and whatnot. But some of the campuses are opened. You know, right now it's the beginning of the fall session, and some of them are opening in the next week or so. But we have been going to the ones that are open, getting out the DVDs to all the faculty members, you know, putting them in their mailboxes, going to the classroom, saying, hey, look, we want you to watch this DVD. Sometimes the professor puts it in there and plays it, and they watch it. Sometimes the students take it, we interrupt the class, they'll put it in their laptop and start watching it. So we do that at the campuses, and then we obviously are organizing, you know, the lower 80%, which includes college kids, but, you know, going to the local grocery stores, the post offices, when there's any kind of event, and, you know, having a certain type of, creating a certain type of effect out on the streets to get people to come into what, you know, what we're seeing is the environment they need to be in to get a sense of what this is. So, yeah, it is the college campuses, but it's also, you know, your grocery stores, your post offices, and if there are Democratic meetings that come up, you know, local city ones, we go to those as well. So, you know, right now we have, I don't know, about 30 people or so in Los Angeles, and, you know, we have a lot of work. I mean, we have a lot we have to do, so there's never a dull moment, so to speak, on what we're doing.
Right. Well, let me pick up on something you said. I noticed in California there was a newspaper cartoon this week. I think it was the Sun from San Diego or somewhere, maybe. But it showed, John, a bank, and the lobby was there, and a customer was sitting in front of the bank officer's desk, and the customer said, I'd like a loan. And the bank officer was sitting behind the desk, and he said, funny, that's what I was going to ask you. But the point you've often made, I mean, you've already talked about this, right, that the bank's bankrupt, but the people are still there, the building's still there, the street was outside, the physical, even if it's decrepit, our physical infrastructure of our nation, which is decrepit, but things are still there. If we do the right policy, we can save the nation. But if we don't, you're saying, you use the expression nation killing. There's nation killing going on by allowing these fake bailouts to proceed on behalf of these parasites. Is this, now, what I'm asking you is, it's like save the people and the nation, not the parasitical banks. Mm-hmm. But you might say something about this regarding the United States, but this is an international question too, where so much is tied, there's still a dollar system, even though the dollar itself and everything is collapsing, right?
Yeah. If you blow up the dollar, since the dollar...
Sorry, we'll hang in there while... Go ahead.
Since the dollar is the global currency, most global trade occurs in dollars. If you blow out the dollar, you blow out everything. You take the whole global financial system down. If the value of the dollar evaporates, then there's nothing left. It's a complete global collapse. Now, the collapse has already really occurred. What happens is that you have these banks, like you're saying, you can still walk in the door. The tellers are still there. You can still conduct some business. But it's sort of like an insect that keeps moving after its head has been cut off, because they've lost so much money in their financial manipulations that they're completely bankrupt. The only thing keeping them alive at this point, the only reason why you can walk in the door, is because of enormous statistical fraud, accounting fraud, and a government which is more interested in protecting the money than they are in protecting the people. But these banks have already failed. They're already in the morgue waiting to be autopsied and buried.
Right. And you've often stressed it's not the detail, but if you think of just the fact that hundreds of U.S.-based banks own a great deal of worthless Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac paper that's not. And the nation of China owns a great deal of guarantees by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac of maybe other so-called mortgage-backed securities held by somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So this is short term. This
yes,
is already
yes.
Okay.
Yes, what we're facing is a chain reaction blowout. And, you know, I mentioned before Weimar hyperinflation, that these bailouts, when you start the process of trying to bail the system out, as we did late last year, and you start pouring more money into a dead system, all you're really doing is devaluing your currency. And that's what Weimar was, that it's the currency was losing its value at an escalating rate. So they had to keep pumping out more and more of it to get any effect. And the faster they would pump it out, the faster they would lose its value. So if you think of a jet fighter plane taking off from a runway and then going straight up, you know, there's this, first it's moving along relatively flat, and then there's a curve, and then finally it just accelerates towards the sky. And that's the period we're in. We're right now in the middle part of that curve where we're getting ready to go into a hyperinflationary explosion. And this Fannie Freddie nonsense, when they actually start doing it, will trigger this.
Well, this is maybe a good point to reiterate one thing. I'd ask you to do this, John and Tori. You kick in on the content of what LaRouche issued months and months ago, called the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, to avoid the kind of thing that's now playing out in extremis. 3 points. Could you reiterate that approach, where what you would do, which is the opposite of this impossible bailout?
Okay, well, the first point, the idea of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, even though this is not a housing crisis or a mortgage crisis, it's a banking crisis, which, and the need for money for the banking system.
Hold on a minute. Here we go.
Excuse me. The need for money for the banking system is what drove the appreciation of real estate prices, because they, with their securities machine, they were pouring more and more money into real estate. And it just climbed up and up and up and up and up until it priced itself out of existence. And because as it was pricing itself out of existence, they started making it easier to get loans for people who couldn't afford them, because the only way you can keep this game going is to start selling homes to people who can't afford them.
So this was the Alan Greenspan success story.
Yeah, but this was a banking crisis. It was, and it reflected itself in the housing, in the price of real estate. Well, that is now blown up. So now you have all sorts of people who live in houses who are paying mortgages that are more than the house is worth. You know, and they're defaulting in record numbers. It's an escalating default. So the first thing we need to do is stop the foreclosures. We don't throw anybody out of their house at this period, you know, because this is not about the people. This is a larger issue. We need to deal with it as a larger issue. So we put up a firewall, stop the foreclosures. The bank protection part of it is that we have to save the banks. We need, an economy needs a banking system which functions. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to take the existing system and protect it, because this banking system doesn't function. So what we're going to do is we're going to have to write off a bunch of this paper. We're going to have to shut a lot of these monstrosities down and reorganize them. Federal government will come in and reorganize them and create tightly regulated banks which do proper banking functions and which are not allowed to do anything else, so that we can have an economy that functions. All right. So that's the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, in a nutshell. And then the next idea is that you want to have a two-tiered credit system. Once you've put this system through bankruptcy, we need to start rebuilding. You want to have low-interest loans at 1 or 2% of directed government credit fed into rebuilding our infrastructure, rebuilding our manufacturing base, science and technology, all the sorts of things that we desperately need to do to get us up and running again. And then the second tier, the higher interest rates, are for other activities. And if people want to build casinos, you know, well, they're going to find it hard to get money. They can get the money, they can build their casino, but this whole junk bond business and all of that, it's gone. And then the third step is to take this approach that we did in the United States and work with other nations, specifically the big four of Russia, China, India, and Brazil, and do this on a global scale. Because if you have that group of nations and other nations that will come with us, that gives you a power block big enough to take on this Anglo-Dutch slime mold. And we can beat it. Because that's the thing that sits on top of the world right now, and that is what we have to throw off. So if you do all of that, then we can totally transform the world. We can have a future that, you know, most people thought was no longer possible.
Yeah, you used to be able to have a future.
Yeah, and we should go back to that. It's a good idea.
Right. Well, Tori mentioned these two kind of delineated these two kind of extremes you run into of people's outlook in the population in California. But let me ask you, John, you've often chosen to identify week by week some of what you could call the mental habits or the controlling opinions that keep people going along with this, like the expression magic of the marketplace, or you have to let market forces play out. But do you have anything to say about this now?
Well, you know, Adam Smith's invisible hand is actually the hand of the British East India Company sticking into your pocket. You know, it was not invisible, and it isn't some sort of market force. It's theft. It's a pickpocket. This system exists by looting. If you look at the history of the British Empire, they made their fortunes by stealing from others, by looting the colonies, by imposing opium on China at the point of a gun. Brutal, really horrible stuff. This is what the British Empire is. Still is. You know, how do you think this is what it takes to support these ridiculous royals running around, you know, like it's medieval fantasies playing out right before our very eyes. And then you have in the U.S., you have this news media, which lies about everything. They reduce everything to who's hot, who's not, who's up, you know, who's winning, who's losing. And this is the same with the financial coverage, you know. The big news, will Lehman survive the weekend? Who cares? This is not what is important. They focus attention on trees to keep you from looking at the forest. You know, you imagine a forest burning down and there's some, you know, the Fox News is out interviewing a tree saying, oh, well, this tree is, it's only about half on fire. I think this tree's probably going to make it. You know, and meanwhile, the forest fire is just advancing. It's just mindless, idiotic crap. And that's what it's supposed to be, because it makes you mindless if you pay attention to that. And that's what they want to do, because cattle are not supposed to think.
Right. Well, I want to throw in a pitch here again for anyone listening, those of you who listen during the week on the website, LaRouchePub.com, or those via the radio message, or excuse me, the telephone message line, that do go on to the LaRouche Pack website and get this pamphlet there, or otherwise there's going to be 100,000 printed. That sounds like a drop in the bucket this coming weekend. It is, relative to how many would like to print. But it's a resources and money question, so contribute. And also, though, that gets me around to what you're saying. There's a certain moment now, though, where despite the bovine or cattle mentality that might have been in effect, when apparently things were working, you could go to a bank and get a loan from the bank instead mm-hmm. of your bank asking you to pick your pocket.
Yeah.
Right. That this can, it's a critical moment that it can make the difference now in what, Tori, you were saying about creativity, breaking out of the groove of being little and unable to do anything. If we get to enough people, as opposed to imagine cheering for either Obama or McCain. I mean, that's some mm-hmm. insanity for us. So on that, Tori, I mean, are you, you might, I don't know if you want to say more about when you do get to, you mention a woman from, if people don't know, I think most people do unless they're out to lunch a little bit, about PUMA. What does that mean? People United.
Party United.
My butt.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But if you want to say more about when people through the DVD or discussions with you suddenly are outside the box, you know, what characterizes some of their reactions?
Well, it's pretty tricky. It's not so, it's obviously not linear in any kind of way on how people respond to figuring something out. I mean, you have a mixed reaction. At first, you have a great amount of sorrow that just overtakes them, saying, "Oh my God, I hadn't realized, or I just didn't know any better. I was participating in something that I have no clue about. My identity was nothing, and all this stuff is happening, and here I am, fixated on my waist size and these types of things." So people, have a moment of a real reflection, a real, it's like sorrow and joy all at one moment. They just, if the floodgates are open, that they figured something out. Like, look, the economy is going down. The people, the population is getting poorer and poorer and more out of control and more out of control. But having to recognize that they can then see that for what it is, that it's not destiny, that it's not fate, it's not, predestination, but it, what's happened to the United States population and parts of Europe, which I've never been to, but with our, European organization out there, what happened to that what happened to that population is, they were beaten up. They were hit over the head for decades that, life should mean is have as much pleasure as possible and avoid any type of pain and just go along, compromise, it's a dog eat dog world, play the game. And so being caught up into that for so long, it eats away at the real potential of population. But once they recognize that this is all planned, because the British have wanted to, the British Empire, that is, and this Anglo-Dutch system has hated the United States, has hated the idea of creativity, has hated the idea that human beings are, can know stuff, that they can participate, that we can develop. Them hating that and trying to, always attack us, always attack us. And so when people get a sense of that historical landscape, like that stage, their role in it, their lives, however, if it was privileged or unprivileged, and how they're playing in that system. But then when they discover that, and when they're like, "Well, look, I can do this," it is the greatest amount, of joy for people to say, "Look, I actually can contribute something to save, the United States and the rest of the world from going into a global dark age, into the destruction of the physical economy, to the destruction of, the population's potential." And so, but getting people to that point, you have to really work on it. It doesn't just happen. You have to have a real consistency. You have to have a real drive because, I mean, not everyone is going to work with us full time. Not everyone has to work with us full time. But we need a certain, amount of the population to do something, and then the best of those people to work with us full time in order to organize a certain, the pivot, the shift inside the United States and the worldwide. But like I said, in order to do that, you have to really, it's a real investment on the organizer to take the time and the seriousness to work people through these types of ideas because, it's an emotional development, which is more tricky, say, than, an intellectual development. You have to really get inside there and let them know that you have the potential to understand history. Like you can know it. History is not dead. Just because the history book was written 10 years ago, the process is still continuing, and you're part of that. And that's what we represent as the LaRouche Youth Movement and as LaRouche PAC, is that people can participate in something to be real, that there is such a thing as reality. It's not all make-believe. And giving people that sense is a, obviously it's a very, very beautiful thing and it's very precious, but it does take a really a very intense amount of concentration to do that.
Right. And Tori, one more thing on that. Do you want to add? I know I think Mr. LaRouche used the expression earlier this morning. He was meeting with some by telephone with some of the LaRouche Youth Movement headquarters kind of people, and he said, you know, a seed crystal at critical points in the population can shift the whole thing, could make history, turn history in a different direction, which is the process you're talking about. And the one thing is, you're involved, right? I mean, we all are, but you're involved in front-ending a real expansion of the impact of the LaRouche Political Action Committee by asking people to join up, not as a card-carrying mechanistic thing, but just the kind of thing you're describing, finding out what ought to be done, literally have a membership, right? Do you want to say something about that?
Well, sure. I mean, just recently, we're always trying to figure out new ways to keep moving forward because you can't, obviously do the same thing over and over again. And so right now, what, Helga had mentioned a few months ago and what Ed Hamler had brought up recently was an LPAC membership drive, which, I mean, it's not just being a member. I mean, we ask people to contribute, obviously, to help us keep getting more memberships. But the membership is, not a card-carrying thing, but it's to work with us and to say, look, I'm with LaRouche. This is what LaRouche is doing, and I'm going to take this out to other people, whether it be, their state, their city council members, their senators, their Congress, creating, organizations based on what we're doing with LaRouche. This, I mean, there's 1,001 things or more that people can do with being a LaRouche PAC member, but the idea is that you are working with the best ideas of LaRouche and you're contributing to develop this movement more so, not for the sake of having this movement, but for the sake of saving the United States from this oncoming collapse. And so, we're asking people, students to contribute $25, other people to contribute 50, but as the membership goes, but it's more so not just the mechanics of getting people to contribute, but it's getting people to actually do something with the guidance of what we're leading as LaRouche PAC. One thing we say people can do as well is that, we have these videos, we have the literature, but also, we have this website, and every day it's updated. Every day we have new stuff on there going through exactly what's going on, because, we are ahead of the game. We're always, LaRouche is always way ahead of the rest of what people are doing, economists, professors, whatever they call themselves, and giving people a sense of, look, LaRouche is leading it. He knows what he's talking about. Read it and see it, and then, call us up and do something. So that's kind of how we're looking at it for right now.
Right. And people listening, especially those on the telephone message line throughout the week or at any time, you can call 800 1-800-929-7566. That's 800-929-7566. And of course, the website is www.larouchepac.com. We are on larouchepub.com. And well, John, let me ask you one aspect of this. The time is going by, but again, you gave a sweep of historically how we had bad guys, especially after the second, you mentioned kind of after the Second World War that tried to gather force to then bring us to the point we are now. And so their pedigree goes way back centuries, but in particular in recent decades, it's international. But it's very much, LaRouche has often used the expression British Foreign Office when it comes to an agent like George Soros. Would you
Yes.
say something about that?
Yes. The this slime mold is centered in the city of London, which is, for those who aren't familiar with the term, not London, the big city, but a square mile within the old heart of London, the city of London, which is sort of the home of this parasite. And what the Venice moved up to London, they studied all of the empires in the past to try to figure out why each empire had failed, and they were determined not to make those mistakes. So they built this grand British Empire, looting the world, and now they're blowing at something fierce. They're making mistakes of their own in doing this, because you can't kill most of the world and have what's left be,
Compliant.
compliant, peaceful,
Willing?
You know, yes. You know, there's, if you set these things into motion, it comes back on you too. And this is what they don't understand. They think they can bring down nations. They think they can take the world back to the days of medieval times of, you know, the lords and the ladies and the peasants. And that's what they're trying to do. You know, it's with sort of with the modern face. I mean, because there's no place where Big Brother is further advanced than in England, where they spy on everybody now, basically all the time. They want to monitor everything you do. And, you know, they're always screaming about there's this problem, there's that problem, and so we need to monitor everybody. Sort of Dick Cheney's wet dream. And, you know, but this is an oppressive system. And this is the nature of the beast. And this has been the fight, the Republican side, the small r Republican faction, who believe that human beings are created in the image of God and that we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, versus this oligarchic concept of the world is a jungle and we're the kings of beasts. And whatever we see, we can kill or eat as it suits us. And that's really the two outlooks. And you can see it very clearly in the way that they're willing to sacrifice the nation in order to try to protect their own power base. You know, look at what's happened to Africa. It's criminal beyond belief what's happened to Africa. And now they're doing the same thing to us in terms of destroying the ability of the population to earn a living and, you know, basically destroying the population. I mean, you know, these are killer systems. This is what I mean by nation killer. This, to the extent that this imperial apparatus thrives, it thrives by killing nations. To the extent that nations thrive by acting like nations and defending their populations, then it kills this imperial apparatus. And I'd say it's time to put a spike through it.
Right. In our remaining time, Tori, I wanted to make sure and ask, see if you wanted to take a moment to describe some of the situation in California of the damage that's being done week by week by the Schwarzenegger regime in this context of nationally this crazy bailout policy and everything else. I mean, do you see it in your daily rounds when it comes to the austerity or what's being cut? One of the famous hospitals in Los Angeles, or anything else you hear? You've been out there for many months, right?
Yes, I've been here. I mean, I've been in LA for 4 years off and on, but I've been here consistently for about 9 months now.
So how would you summarize it?
Well, the thing is that, you know, what John is saying, nation killing, I mean, this thing is a death policy. And you see it with, you know, the hospital shutting down, you know, schools being undercut, nurses being undercut, these types of things. But the greatest damage is the demoralization of the population. That's the biggest enemy to the United States right now, as from what I see, is people being demoralized, which makes them impotent, which makes them not want to do anything. You know, we go to the grocery stores, like I said earlier, and what do people buy? I mean, what do you think they're buying? Alcohol, buying booze, you know, 40 ounces. Because they're trying, you know, going home, drinking, watching the boob tube, not wanting to deal with it. And, you know, that's the lower 80%. I mean, the bourgeois whites might not be buying 40s, but they're buying, you know, Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Sauvignon, you know, cases of that at Trader Joe's. And they're, you know, they're just drinking away and, you know, just being, sitting there and being demoralized. And that people have to really get a sense of the real consequences of having being demoralized as a population, as an individual. And so those are the people that we are wanting to get back into the process, is saying, look, you can't sit around feeling sorry, even though it is a sorry situation. You have to get a sense of what you can do. You have to get a sense of how it's happened. You know, what caused this? You know, it wasn't inevitable. It was planned. And there is a way to intervene in this. You know, we are the United States of America. There is a deep sense of optimism that we do have. You know, we had we won the Revolutionary War, we won the Civil Rights Movement, we had Martin Luther King, we had very, very great leaders. And that is within, you know, all of the American population to a certain degree. And it's inspiring them in that sense to do something. And so that's what you see with the effects of the budget cuts of, you know, the war in Iraq, you know, with the veterans coming, not getting any respect. With all of those things that are happening, the senseless things, is the demoralization, and counteracting that is what our greatest obstacle.
Right. And John, well, one thing is that just the opposite of the effort to remoralize people and bringing them back to be human beings, this network that works the show in Congress. You know, you mentioned a number of people, Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, and these people. This is part of the string pulling that you described that's connected to Felix Rohatyn?
Yes. Yes. That, you know, if you look at why has the Democratic Party gone along with all the Republican policies?
So because
at the, yeah. Because at the top, they're both run by the big money. And the big money wants a certain thing. They don't care whether you label it Democrat or Republican. You know, so we've done nothing about the war. We keep having the buildup of the police state. Why? Why the police state? Is Al-Qaeda really out there everywhere? You know, this is, the boogeyman is everywhere. You turn off the lights, he's, you know, he's under your bed. He's in the closet. We've got to spy on everything, everywhere, all the time. Otherwise, we'll all die. Well, this is all aimed at the population because they know what's coming. They know that we're headed towards, in the short term, crashes of some major banking institutions. In the slightly, once that starts, then the chain reaction begins and the whole thing comes crumbling down. And there's not going to be food. There's not going to be all sorts of services. And then you're going to see why this police state stuff was put there, because there's going to be a crackdown like you wouldn't believe, because this is going to be forced down the throat of the American public at the point of a gun. That's the intention. That's why they put all these things into place. You know,
that's a prospect. Let me say, would you draw you out on one aspect of this? You know, there's not food, there's not gas at the gas station, or there's not... it's September, and in New England, or in the northeast of the United States, that the preponderance of home heating, other than in the city, is fuel oil, heating oil, as
yes.
It's called. And the price of that, like gasoline and everything else, is way up and was a household budget buster last year, let alone this year.
Yeah.
Okay? And let me just tell people that in 2001, when the full impact of deregulation of energy across the board was in, and Dick Cheney became the incoming new head of an energy task force, John, you testified in Boston over just this in December 2000.
Yes.
That heating oil prices were going through the roof.
Yes.
And I think about 30 states passed resolutions encouraged by the LaRouche effort that something should be done about mm-hmm. it. And in that round, we didn't win, so to speak, that round, except that many people know about that fight. But in other words, what are we going to, and I'm not saying this as a passive bystander, you know, if you do nothing, you could anticipate at best having the National Guard having warming centers where you have 10,000 people gathered if it gets too cold to stay in your home.
Yeah,
but
are...
what about the speculation, the cost of heating oil? Draw that out.
Well, people are going to freeze to death. How many? We'll see. Totally unnecessary, because this is all driven by speculation. This is driven by the need, the ability, because of deregulation, of the financial system to stick its hand into the these revenue streams.
Of different commodities, of all
different
kinds?
Commodities and all of that, because of complete deregulation, abdication of responsibility by Congress over and over again, year after year after year. So there are no protections against this sort of thing. And then now when you have a financial crisis where everybody in the financial world is fighting for their lives, and they see the opportunity to steal this way, to siphon off money, then they take it. So you have this price of oil, which just goes sky high. not because of supply and demand, not because of OPEC. The real oil cartel is the big oil companies who control the supply and distribution, then the processing. And then these financial markets like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and ICE, where these things are traded and speculated on. This is what drives up the price. People are going to freeze to death because the U.S. Congress doesn't have the guts or the morality to stop the speculation. That's what it amounts to.
Right. I'll just throw in the last week, because Congress is intending to only be around a few weeks. That's itself shows you the problem. But of course, maybe it's better because of the fact they aren't doing anything.
given what they do,
it's a toss-up. But the speculation in energy, the Agriculture Department had a full committee hearing 2 days ago on speculation in oil, just what you said, and in basic grains and other things, with even some of the congressmen, like one from Kansas, the home of wheat, saying it can be shown that that the markets aren't working anymore as far as buying futures in grains, because it's entirely controlled by speculators who hold all the positions, not by bakeries, not by farmers, not by grain processors or cereal company makers. But Congress did nothing.
Yes. Yes. They do nothing. That's what they do.
So anyway, let's go back to Tory, because in the remaining minutes, Tory, do you want to say something about looking ahead? I don't know about in terms of any new plans, or to reiterate, we're going to do more of the same to change the world, of the kind of process you described of organizing with the DVDs and so forth.
Well, I mean, I would say the way that we're looking at it is, you could say it's possibly more of the same, but you know, with LaRouche's economics, he always goes through this idea of the principle of the rate of increase. You know, and that can go in two different directions. It can go up, it can go down. And the way that we're looking at that economic physical principle is in the organizing, that what we have to do more of is intensify the concentration span to carry through what we have to do, which the way that we're doing that, you know, LaRouche had put together a curriculum, so to speak, for the youth to be able to bring back a real education policy inside, you know, the youth movement and to the rest of the nation, looking at the greatest minds of physical science, you know, great composers like Bach and so forth, and looking at how those people were able to have a certain type of insight, so to speak, into what's real, what is a reflection of how the universe operates and how human beings operate in that. And so with that said, you know, you have to have that same type of method of thinking in the organizing. I mean, the cultural, social methods of organizing does subsume, say, you know, like what LaRouche has indicated, physical science. And so really getting to really be able to bite onto that and bite even harder all the time into that kind of concentration to move the population so we can have that pivot in the course of history. And so that's what we're always working on, is how to improve that type of emotional, intellectual capability to get people, to teach other people, maybe not just teach them, but have a certain type of method of pedagogy, so other people can have that type of concentration as well, that type of real in-depth thinking into real processes. And so that's the way that, you know, our method, that's what we have been doing, that's what we're continuing to always work on and come back to that, all different types of ways, new ideas, new projects, but the idea you're investing into the minds of the youth movement so we can invest into the minds of the population. And, you know, that's our future outlook, so to speak. And I don't know if that changes or just changes forms, but that's how we go about it.
Great. Well, we only have a few remaining seconds, and I thank Santiago, who sent an email regarding the fact that people can look. It was a video of LaRouche, a taping of his comment on the Treasury Secretary Paulson's action for this mega bailout, calling it tantamount to treason. And so, John, Santiago asks about different interpretations, but maybe you just want to close with why this is tantamount to treason.
Well, it's tantamount to treason because the U.S. Constitution has a general welfare clause, which says the people come first. And you cannot, it is illegal to put something like this money ahead of the welfare of the population. It's unconstitutional, which makes it illegal. And, you know, so Paulson is basically selling the whole nation, the whole concept of what the United States was founded to be, down the river with this nonsense. And it won't work.
Right. And what will work, the kind of thing that ran up against, that had tremendous support in the last few years, the Economic Recovery Act of 2006, and updated for the present day, this will work. It's on the websites, LaRouchePub.com. I refer that to Santiago and anyone else about tooling up even the decrepitude we have, but to restore the real physical economy again. This can be done. And so I guess on that note, we have to end today, September 13th, 2008, the LaRouche Show. I ask everyone to listen in the 20th and get the latest update, including in the countdown to the General Assembly of the United Nations, which is part of the world arena of the fight that we are waging. And so today I thank Tori Harrison, John Hofel. This is Marcia Mary Baker signing off from the LaRouche Show, September 13th. Thank you all.